thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, you're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I'm Wole here with my boy Ray Jeezy. I think Will T's on, but let me patch my fellas in real quick. Y'all know we doing our social distancing thing, so it's just me in the studio and everybody else is on the phone. What's going on, folks?
What's up, bro?
Wally, what's up, man?
Is that who I think it is? Is that, sir. All right, we're going to key you in, all right? Give me like 2 minutes, all right?
All right.
My man. Hey, what's up? What's going on, Ray? I love live stuff, man. It's official.
I know, right? It's all good. Can you hear me all
right? Yeah, you're great, man. I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. I'm experimenting with this new earpiece. So, all is well, man. Hey, yo, it's crazy. Because I'm sitting here contemplating as I'm about to come on the show. I'm like, bruh, there's some questions that you just sometimes can't answer when it comes to sports.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all this talk about the NBA restart and all, I ain't going to get us all subject.
Yeah.
But just real quick, think about this. If you had to start a franchise today, you had the choices of a young Blake Griffin, a young Kenyon Martin, or Zion, who would you choose?
A young Blake.
There's like no right answer, right?
Yeah, not really.
That'd be hard. It'd be hard to choose, man.
I probably got it. Who's the middle one?
Kenyon Martin.
Blake.
Kenyon Martin, and a young Kenyon Martin at that.
You know, let me announce the dude already. This is my man Delonte Holland, all right? Everybody know who it is. I want to make sure folks know who the voice is. Go ahead, D.
Hey, what's up, man?
But go ahead. Who that was D talking, right?
It was.
Yeah, go ahead, D. What's your opinion?
I mean, I probably would have to go with Zion. I think his offense is a little bit more probably than Blake right now as far as a rookie. He hasn't even got started yet, man. He can handle that thing. He's got kind of a nice little set shot. And remember, he's still a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, set shot from the 3-point line. I mean, Blake, I mean, that's some really good competition right there. But I probably have to go with Zion. Probably hands down.
Ray Jeezy, who would you have, man?
I can't choose. That's the problem.
And I know it's hard, man.
Like, it's just some answers you can never find, man. And I'm going to leave it at that. I would be okay with any of them. You know what I mean? If I was a head coach at HBCU, like my alma mater, UMES, and I had to pick between one of them, I wouldn't pick Blake, unfortunately. I wouldn't go with the light-skinned brother, but I would probably, and I guess Kenyon Martin is light-skinned too, so, you know, I'll be hating on my own people, but nah, that's a tough one, man, because they, at a young age, man, Kenyon Martin, to me, was just as explosive as Zion or
oh, man, he was real.
As Blake, but
he was real, man.
It's crazy. Yeah, but Zion is one in a generation type dude. Zion at his size and the way he can move and jump. It's a hard decision, man. But, I mean, that's the dope part about sports, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's tough because you can't sleep on Kenyon Martin either, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Zion, he just seems to be kind of does everything well, you know,
mm-hmm.
as far as his ball handling skills, too, his feel for the game. But, like I said, it's a real tough group right there.
Definitely is. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. Hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our new Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search the Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Just check it out on Facebook. Will T would normally say this, but I don't think Will T's in the building yet, right? All right, so I'll just say it. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap as part of our – you hear the voice, man. As part of our PG Baller series, we have right now 2000 All Met Hooper, Delonte Holland on the show. As you can hear his voice, you know, you're hearing D right now. At 8:25, we'll talk about the life and legacy of all-time great Redskins offensive line coach Joe Bugle. He passed during the weekend. At 8:35, we'll talk about Cam Newton signing with the New England Patriots. Finally, at 8:50, we'll discuss Major League Baseball returning. But first, like I mentioned, we got Delonte Holland on the line, 2000 All-Met from Greenbelt, Spring Hill Lake. I want to mention that, Spring Hill Lake. Eleanor Roosevelt High School. D, what's going on, man? What's been popping, man?
Man, not much. Just been chilling. How you been, man? Thanks for having me.
Ain't no problem, man. You know, once I announced that you were going to be on the show, you know, Al texted me. He was like, you got D on the show?
Al, right?
Yeah.
I definitely, yeah, when you know, as soon as I saw what you've been doing, man, so, you know, I definitely want to. Definitely wanted to show some love, and like I said, thanks for having me.
No problem, man. D, tell the folks about your business and whatnot, though. You're being too modest right now.
What's that? You said the business?
Yeah.
So yes, yeah, it's a local business, garage door business. So I mean, we're 20% of them. Just try to get to our customers the best job we can, affordable price.
Okay, so D, I know you've seen, like, you know, the PG, I mean, I'm guessing you saw the PG back the documentary, KD's documentary, Basketball County in the Water. I mean, did you have any thoughts or opinions about the documentary? Did you like it?
Well, you know, we're in the business and things of that nature. I didn't get a chance to see all of it.
Okay.
I did listen to Mike Sweeney's podcast. So I pretty much, I mean, judging by what I've heard, of course, I've heard a lot about it. I just haven't had a chance to sit down with him. But, I mean, you know, I mean, I think it's a good representation. PG basketball for sure. Notoriety for sure. Town here. Definitely when we were coming up as well. So
Ray, you had a question for D?
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, we don't know each other, but I went to the better high school down the street, Goudal. on top of that, man.
Goudal, I'm sorry.
Hey, you should have, man. It's a lot different right now, but anyway, see, my man in college, freshman year, man, my next door neighbor, his name was Ofadale, man. You was all he talked about. Ofadale, we used to watch tournament games together and everything. So I was rooting for you back in the day, man. It was crazy, you know, small world. But we had Mike Sweeney on the show. You say you listen to him. We also had Coach Butch on, and he threw some names out there. He meaning Coach. And also, Mike Sweeney did too. Mike Sweeney threw Ricky Shields out there. You know, he went to Rutgers, of course. And one thing that Coach mentioned was Dickie Simpkins, who went to Friendly. You know, two guys who stayed at their public school, man, throughout their career. And Mike Sweeney obviously did the same thing. DJ, you know, he transferred. A lot of guys typically want to go to a prep school, a private school. What's your thoughts about that? Do you think your path would have been different maybe if you were to transfer? And did you have the opportunity to transfer out by the Roosevelt?
Well, I mean, I always thought the prep school was, I mean, you know, you want to get as much exposure as you can and notoriety, and, you know, you want to be on a stage that, you know, the program that you're a part of, you know, would allow. So I definitely think, you know, prep school, even though, you know, at that time, there was a lot of notoriety as far as, you know, that Prince George's County Public School circuit as well, but I mean, either option, you know. I think AAU is huge. Mm-hmm. Just whatever you can, you know, whatever you can get to, however you can get to it.
So D, Ray mentioned Mike Sweeney. He was actually on our show a couple weeks ago, and he talked about, like, your squad, your 2000 squad at Roosevelt. What do you remember about that team?
Our team.
Yeah, your team. No, forget Oxon Hill, man. Your team, man.
I mean, you know, I think we had a great coach in Green Ferrello, starting off with. I just remember our practices, and you know, he really pushed us. Mm-hmm. You know, first and foremost. I mean, as far as conditioning was concerned, you know, it definitely, because I felt like we worked harder maybe than some other schools. I don't know for sure, but I know that those practices definitely prepared me for, you know, going off to college and everything. But, I mean, I thought we had a good team. Mm-hmm. I thought we had one of the strongest teams in the area. I mean, from Eddie Baston, of course, Galante West. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list goes on. But I thought it was a pretty well-coached team say the least. I mean, Mike, you know, those guys had a squad. We really couldn't get past Oxen Hill. I think maybe four years mm-hmm. that I was there. So, you know.
No, yeah, he talked about that. He was surprised that Oxen Hill could basically beat you guys like that. He thought your squad was better, but he was like, you know, going against your squad was tough. He was surprised that he was able to beat the Roosevelt squad, but you know, during his tenure like that.
Yeah, I mean, they were tough. They were tough. I mean, they had inside, outside, defense, big man. They were also well coached. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just remember those were the games you definitely get up for. I mean, mm-hmm. you want to get up for all of them
mm-hmm.
in practice, but definitely Oxen Hill and that rivalry was something special.
Was that your favorite opponent in high school?
I'd have to see. I mean, it's definitely one where you knew, you know, you wanted basketball. You know, everybody has their own philosophy, but, I mean, it's about who makes the least amount of mistakes. So, you know, at the end of the day, people are going to turn the ball over, things are going to happen.
But, mm-hmm.
I mean, you know when you played Oxen Hill that you only had a few errands. And, you know, if you let it get out of hand, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ray, Will, you got any questions?
Well, see, one thing that was dope about Oxen Hill is, and Mike pointed out, is they played Boys and Girls Club together for years before they even started high school. So they already had chemistry, man. And that's why I feel like they had an advantage. Now, going back a bit, you know, it was 3A and 4A back then. Like I said, I went to Duval. We were 3A, so we didn't play. We might play High Point once. We'll play Parkdale once. You play all the 4A schools once, but you never really got to develop a rivalry with them schools. So that's why I feel like, you know, schools like Parkdale and Oxen Hill and Roosevelt, y'all had those rivalries because y'all played each other. Now the format is different. Do you feel like it's better today in PG County where all the schools pretty much play each other, or do you think back in the day it was the best system in place where you played schools of a similar size and you were able to develop those rivalries? And, you know, you can ultimately play 3+ times a year if you include the playoffs.
See, I'm just learning that now. I didn't know that that's the structure these days. Yeah, I didn't know that all of PG plays each other now. I would think just offhand, I would think that that's better, you know, than what it was. Because, I mean, you know, if you can hoop and you're in a different – I don't know what division Gwynn Park was in, but I know that they had a squad as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that would have been nice to play them. So the chances that they did get to scrimmage them, and, you know, it was a while ago. But, I mean, just offhand, but like I said, I don't really know, you know, the latest or what the competition is as of today. But I would like that structure.
Yeah, Gwynn Park was 3A, so we played Gwynn Park. You know, you had schools like Forestville that was like 1A or 2A, so you wouldn't see those type of schools. But Bladensburg, Bladensburg was 3A, they were in our division too. They were tough, man. They just, and Crossville was tough. It would have been nice, I think, if everybody played each other. That's just me personally.
I have to agree with you. Yeah, I didn't even realize they do that now. I mean, I definitely have to agree with you.
So
you had guys two guys. Oh, wait,
go ahead, because my question is all
now.
I was
gonna mention like a couple guys that are younger. Chris McCray, he played for Fairmont, which again was a school that you wouldn't have seen. And Chris McCray was dropping 40 in high school. And you had another dude you may not know who he is, Wally. I don't know if you remember his name, was Sterling Ledbetter. He played for Maryland too at one point.
Mm-hmm.
He was a point guard freshman year, varsity, playing for High Point, man. And to me, like, their exposure was limited in part because of the system that was in place. That's all I really wanted to add, you know what I mean? So just adding to the point that, yeah, what they have today I think is a little bit better than what we were dealing with back then.
Yeah, and I mean, just as a competitor, I know that, you know, when Roosevelt was known for academics,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the tradition was starting to begin. So I would have loved it because at that point, we played a game to compete, so we were just looking for a way, you know, so it would have been good, definitely. You know, it excites me now just thinking about it, so you know, I definitely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone could just play at that particular time, too.
So, what ballers in the area influenced you growing up, D?
I'll probably have to go with Steve Francis.
Oh, wow, okay.
You know, yeah, I used to watch him, and I'd say Joe Forte, Keith Bogan, Lamar Johnson, you know, they were older. I think Roosevelt, we got a Glenn Ferrello, we got a chance to scrimmage at the MAP, the preseason. So, you know, those were the guys that, you know, Steve was older. Well, we got a chance to see Steve, you know, at the Kenner League, Georgetown, you know, and but really just, you know, some of the older guys, you know, some of the wing players, you know, it was just exciting that, you know, you saw a guy and then they went off, you know, played all across the country, come back ranked, and, you know, you definitely wanted to go against them and see where you at.
You know, Al's mad, right? Because you didn't, like, mention him, though, right?
Who's that?
You know, Al's mad because you ain't mentioned him, right? You know that, right? My brother's mad. That's why I know that.
who's that now? I mean, I'm better than them games from back in the day.
I'm about to say.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you had so many people that went off to do, you know, incredible things, whether it's in athletics or, you know, in school and principals, you know, things were just really impressive. I thought that was a really good time. So lucky to be a part of that for them.
Hey, real talk though, man, Roosevelt, up until the time y'all got there, was like a football school for real. Like, Jermaine Lewis, he lived in my neighborhood. And, yeah, man, football, they was always in the conversation from early 90s all the way up until we was in high school. Matter of fact, some of my mans, and then they won the state in 2000. I was a freshman in college at the time. So how does that feel that, you know, your team, that I guess, era, if you want to call it that, those years you were there, along with the guys you already mentioned, kind of kicked off the basketball tradition that, and man, that's really dope now, you know what I'm saying? Looking at some of the guys that have gone on to play D1 and play college ball, and also just always appearing in state final games and has won at least one I know of in the last, you know, 10 years. What's your feelings on just feeling like you're a part of that tradition, so to speak?
Well, I mean, definitely looking back at it, you know, and reminiscing about that point in time, you know, it's definitely something to be, you know, happy to be a part of. While I was there, I mean, we were just trying to win, you know, we wanted to win state and we were just competing. So as far as the moment, you know, I'm not sure if I had recognized it at the time, you know, we were just so competitive. Our practices were just amazing, especially our Saturday morning practices. But you know, it definitely feels good, you know, to be a part of that and the tradition changing or expand basketball. So definitely a lot of talent came out of that school.
So, Delonte, you know, during that time, Roosevelt getting ready to leave, you were supposed to go to Rhode Island, right?
Yeah, I was supposed to go to Rhode Island at first. I ended up going out to Kansas, Independence, then another school in Indiana, Vincennes, and then I ended up transferring to St. Vincent de Paul, Chicago.
So, in DePaul, you were there 03-04. You were U.S. Conference USA's all second team. You were on all second team. Did you enjoy your time at DePaul?
You know, I actually loved it.
Okay.
You know, looking back at it, I mean, because, you know, you're playing college basketball. I mean, you know, you're away from home. And, you know, it's a big deal in Chicago. And, you know, being in Conference USA, I wasn't lucky enough like Mike to be able to play Georgetown because I always wanted to play at home.
You know?
But still getting up, yeah, I definitely, you know, it took me a while to just really, I was such a homebody at first. So when I first left, you know, it was tough. But, you know, and then it was Conference USA, so it was in the Midwest. You know, I was just so much of a homebody I wanted to play on. You know? But I thought it was a good opportunity. You know, we went to the NCAA tournament. I think we got eliminated before the Sweet 16. We got a chance to go against Ben Gordon and Okafor and, you know, that run that UConn had. But, you know, those were, yeah, and it was good because to see Delonte West, we were all up at, you know, we were stationed for the our division or whatever.
Yeah, the region.
Buffalo.
Your region.
Yeah, our region. So it was good to go against. St. Joe's was there, and then Eddie Bass, and he was also there too.
So, that's awesome.
You know, it was really good. Yeah.
And y'all got any questions?
Nah, that's it. I just want to give a shout out to KD because this is the second person in the last month that said they want to play at home, and he still don't want to come back home. maybe it is him, man. You know what I mean? It might be his problem. It's not ours, man. We clearly got something going on. People still want to play at home.
Exactly.
Right? Mike Sweeney mentioned he wanted to be drafted by the Wizards. So, it depends on the person. Everybody's different, but. KD might.
Yeah, it depends on the person, you know, because sometimes it could be better. It depends on just, you know, your focus, and I'm sure KD can play anywhere. But, I mean, you know, it would be good to see him in a Wizards uniform, but, you know, I guess it is up to the player.
So, hey, so Delonte, did, so Maryland ever try to talk to you at that time?
Not seriously.
Okay.
Not seriously. We did a lot of unofficial visits and, you know, got a chance to see the practice facility and things of that nature. But who was the coach at the time?
Gary Williams?
My mom. Yeah, Williams. He just, nothing really turned out. So ultimately, I did. Because it was great. You know, I could almost work for the university. It's very late. Almost.
Yeah, no, like, right there.
Definitely wanted to play there. And then watching Steve with all those guys, you know, so.
So you went overseas. You played most of your time over Europe. How, do you like the experience over there?
I did. It really depends on what country,
okay,
what situation you're in.
And what countries did you play in?
Well, my first year I went out to Serbia, actually just Slovenia. And that was 2004, 2005. And I hated it at first, you know, but, you know, I just had to learn to live, you know, like in a different culture. A lot of guys, some guys just don't like being over there, you know, in different countries. Some guys do. So it was tough not being able to, just like simple things, change your snack, stuff like that, you know, it was just tough. But, Serbia, then I went to Italy, then I don't even remember. I think I was there for maybe 4 or 5 years. France a little bit, Lebanon, Venezuela, Argentina, a few other places.
And you played against Gallinari, right, overseas. I saw on Wikipedia you dropped 50 on him?
Yeah, I got a chance to play against him.
You dropped 50 on him?
Was it him? It was his team, you know?
It wasn't him.
It was his team. Because I was on a different team earlier that year. We were it was a team down called, they switched the sponsors every year. The team was Virtus Bologna. And so I had transferred from there midway to the team that I was playing with in Varese, which is North Italy, north of Milan. So I had transferred, got traded midway during the season. So I had kind of a chip on my shoulder, you know, so we were just trying to really make the playoff. And that just happened to go like that.
Being real humble with it too.
I know, right? You know what I'm saying? He was like it was his team. Right, it was his team. Not Gallinari, it was his team.
Because it's like, man, you can prepare, you can do everything you can, and then the game might not go the way that you're playing. You know what I mean? We're trying to figure out, you know, the defender, or trying to figure out the way that the coaches have the defense set up, which way they're trying to push you. So, I mean, I started to feel like a little later on, towards the middle of my career, like, all I can do is just try to prepare as much as I can, but sometimes they hard, sometimes they don't, honestly.
So,
yo, I got one last question.
Go ahead, bro.
if the G League was in existence back then, would you have gone that route before heading overseas, or would you have stuck with the same game plan, hypothetically speaking?
I think mentally at that time, I probably would have stayed here.
Mm.
But just so with the league, I'm not really too familiar with it, but I know at that particular time, I would have stayed here and just, saw what I could do, just especially then.
So
but later on, the finances, the bag, if I could, myself now, I would just set one of those seats on the gate and focus in on the bag more so. Because,
So, D, coming back and forth, did you get a legit opportunity to get on the NBA roster? I know you were on a couple of teams in terms of summer league or whatnot, but in camp, did you get a legit chance?
Well, I'd say like this. Verbally, there was a legit chance, but I wasn't sure about the playing time. There's so many, you don't know necessarily. Yeah, because, on the practices, everything was doing well, but as far as getting a playing time, that you can really kind of see, where the teams or the coaches game plan, what direction they want to go in. So, I don't really know, but I do know that I enjoyed every second of it, though.
Mm. So anybody else got any questions for D before I let him go?
I'm good, man. Appreciate the time, bro.
Hey, D. Before I let you go, is there anything you would like to add?
Not at the moment, man.
That's about it. You so modest, bro. Not at the moment. You used to be arrogant and cocky. What happened to you, man? You all like shine bashful right now, bro.
Nah, because as you get older, man, when you're younger, you just feel like you're invincible. As you get older, man, you just understand that how hard things are, and you got to really work towards it. You got to be consistent with it. So you just kind of appreciate things.
Oh, man. I remember.
I'm still confident on that court. On the court.
What'd you say,
Ray? I said you should start coaching, man.
He don't got the patience to coach.
I don't got the patience. I don't know. Because I like effort, man. You give effort. I'm cool. I work with you. So it's different these days. So real effort, man. You got to real effort.
I feel you. Hey, D, man. Thanks for being on, my man. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Hey, send me that file. Remember, because I was looking for it. I ain't see it. Send me that file.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't get it to you in time.
It's all good. All right. Just send it to me anytime, and I'll use it, all right?
All right, D.
Take it easy. All right, man. That was good, man. Is Will on now?
I'm here.
Okay. I was about to say. All right. We're about to go to break. Redskins is great. Joe Bugle passed over the weekend. We'll talk about his legacy and career after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig. I'm waiting for deuces.
How do I say goodbye to what we had? The good time that made us laugh, I'll wake back. I thought we get. Going to be
And I'll take with me the memories.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, Will T, Ray Jeezy. About to patch on the fellas real quick. Let's see. I want to appreciate Delonte for being on. What's going on, fellas?
Nothing much, man.
All right, Will T, you're good?
Yep.
So crisp and clean. This audio is amazing. All right, so all-time great Skins offensive line coach Joe Bugle passed over the weekend. What's his legacy as a football coach or offensive line coach?
The Hogs.
Mm-hmm.
The Hogs. Building the, I guess for lack of a better word, the infrastructure, or not, I wouldn't say the infrastructure, but building that offensive line that helped power Washington to three championships during the two during the 80s, mm-hmm, and one in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Ray?
When you make it all the way to being a head coach, you know you were a special talent.
That's
so
true.
It's clear that he did an amazing job. I just am so happy that the celebration of his life brings back some of the more fond memories of this franchise back when they were a fixture in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. So big shout out to Joe Bugle, Joe Gibbs. I'm sure that they'll again be celebrating his life, mm-hmm, over the next, you know, month or so. And guys will probably get back together. Again, it's a chance to reminisce on, you know, like I said, the glory days. So shout out to Joe Bugle and his family, and just, you know, obviously keep them in your thoughts, because it's such a difficult time in general, obviously, with,
yeah,
the pandemic and in the past during this time. Obviously lived a long time, but still tough.
Post the same question about his legacy on Facebook. George, he posted coach of the most famous and arguably greatest offensive line in NFL history. Aaron Muhammad, Hall of Fame, Hogs, held to the Redskins. To me, it's just more like there would be no Joe Gibbs if it wasn't for Joe Bugle. You know what I mean? Joe Gibbs is a phenomenal coach, but to have a guy as your right hand man to develop offensive lines on like what he produced, which Will was talking about in the late 80s, in the 80s and 90s and early 90s, was amazing. And also even coming back, being an aging coach and helping out the O-line with, you know, Chris Samuels, John Jansen and company. He did a good job with that line coming back with Joe Gibbs at 2.0. So just, you know, being that resource for Coach Gibbs is something that, you know, he was really important to bringing some success to the organization. And, you know, and like Ray said, to come from being an offensive line coach and being pursued to be a head coach, I believe he went to the Arizona Cardinals that year, Ray, as the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Arizona Cardinals. So to just to have that position open to you because of what you did as a position coach just shows his greatness. Would you say, like, he's, in terms of your knowledge, the best offensive line coach you've seen, or is there others better than him or whatnot or whatever? I know we're speaking because obviously he passed, but still.
I'm going to throw Mike Shanahan in.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
one. Because
yeah,
the similarities to me is no matter who you put back there, they were going to have protection,
mm-hmm,
and they were going to be able to run the football. You know what I mean? You can't pinpoint necessarily a Redskins great running back. I know with the Broncos, maybe you say Terrell Davis.
But yeah,
both squads, you know, whoever you handed the ball off to, whoever,
sure,
again, was passing, they knew that they had a reliable front and leading them, a group in front of them that was going to hold them down. I mean, obviously, you think about some of those Cowboys group, going back to the Stefanskis, that
Eric Williams, Larry Allen.
There we go. But yeah, Joe Bugle's right up there at the top of the list, brother. Definitely.
Will?
No, just to kind of reiterate some of the things, or, you know, add something to perspective to what Ray said. You know, Washington, you know, won three championships.
Mm-hmm.
There was no consistent quarterback that, you know, like, you know, when you think of the Patriots now, you think of Tom Brady as the quarterback. There was no one quarterback that was the leader of this team. What led this team was that offensive line.
True.
There even wasn't a running back per se that you can say outside of John Riggins, who was the dominant running back running behind that those offensive line, the Hogs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a testament to his coaching and just a testament to the offensive system that him and Joe Gibbs helped build with that power running scheme.
No, I agree. I mean, look at even in, you know, the Super Bowl against the Denver Broncos and, like, Timmy Smith, you know what I mean? Like, came out of nowhere. Then you had, you know, Ernest Biner. I mean, he was a decent back, but you can see that, you know, with that offensive line, you know, it made him 10 times better. You know, Ricky Irvin's, they ran well, you know, because of the offensive line, and Joe Bugle is the reason for that. You know, so, I mean, you know, like Ray said, you know, condolences go out to the family, his friends and family. You know, rest in heaven, man. For Skins Nation, you know, you're much appreciated. Superman is in New England. We'll discuss Cam Newton being a Patriot after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
I done did a lot of things in my day. I admit it, I don't take back what I say. If I said it, then I meant it. All my life I won a Grammy, but I probably never get it. I ain't never had no trophy or no motherfucking ribbon. Up the system, I'm that bitch. Bend the law, cut the rules. I'm about to risk it all. I ain't got too much to lose. Y'all been eating long enough. It's my turn to cut the food. Pass the plate with my drink. This my day. Lucky you, hope you too. Woo! Y'all gotta move. Y'all gotta move. Y'all gotta move.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Ray Jeezy, and Will T. Let me patch in the fellas. All right. Cam Newton agreed to a one-year, $7.5 million deal with the New England Patriots. Your thoughts on the deal? Ray, you can go first. Will, you go first. Will, go first.
I mean, let's report it accurately. It's for the league minimum. $1.8 million.
Oh, it's 1.8 now. Oh, incentives. Okay.
Up to $7.5 million. Okay. Which I think in itself is disrespectful.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go on and talk about that.
No, I mean, when have you known a former NFL MVP quarterback that is under the age of 30? I believe he's under 30. Correct.
He may be right at 30.
Or just turning, hitting his prime.
Yeah.
Who may be coming off of an injury, signing for the league minimum. Let that sink in for a second.
Well,
he's 31.
He's 31, right? By the way. Yeah, 31.
Okay, well, 31. Well, he's coming off an injury, but he's entering what we would consider, you know, that sweet spot where quarterbacks are kind of in their prime.
Yeah, he's not old.
Right?
He's not like a running back, yeah.
And signs for the league minimum.
Yeah.
That in itself is baffling. That's one. Two, you know, for as much praise as this signing is getting, I don't necessarily think it's a home run.
Okay.
No, I think from a stylistic standpoint, yes. You know, Josh McDaniels, you know, is a very creative offensive coordinator who can do a lot of things with, you know, developing a scheme around the talents of the quarterback or and the skilled players, and also finding the vulnerability in that defense that they're facing.
Mm-hmm.
But my question or concern is the culture in Cam Newton, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know when things get down with Cam Newton, his body language is not the best, right? Because he hates to lose so much. How does that, does that work, or does it clash with, you know, that culture that Bill Belichick has established in New England? That's one. Two, the fans. I mean, I don't know if people want to readily admit this. No, here's the thing. I don't know if people want to readily admit this.
Yeah.
But Boston is
probably
the most racist sports town in America.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put not just a black quarterback, but that black quarterback in Boston. you know, someone like Cam Newton, who's very confident, some would say, some people may say cocky, who is very flamboyant with his dress after the games. How do these things mesh? You know, I think from a football perspective, it's definitely a fit. It's an interesting combination. It's a fit, but there are other ancillary things that make me concerned.
Right.
I'll respond to both points. Number one is we've seen guys like Bill Russell and Kevin Garnett embraced, and even Randy Moss in his one season in New England, which was historic. They were embraced in that area. I hear what you're saying, and I'm not disagreeing that there is racism, but down south there's racism too. So, I mean, I don't think that's a factor for me. I'm just saying, I'm not disagreeing. I just want to put that out there. But why I like the fit is because in Carolina, when did Cam Newton ever have a star receiver or a top-tier receiver? He didn't.
Yeah.
But he would always have a reliable tight end, a guy like Greg Olsen. He also had a good running back by committee with D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. If you've seen New England's teams, even when Corey Dillon was there, it's always been by committee. Sammy Morris, you throw in different guys that you can think of that Belichick has used, different receivers, but he always has typically a strong tight end. I just feel like Cam is used to playing with a certain type of personnel, and when you factor in Belichick and the way that they coach and the mentality that they have, Junior Seau, I remember when he had that rant, like, man, nobody is celebrating. We just won an AFC championship. It's special around here. So I think it's going to change Cam Newton. The culture is going to change him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a very valid point, Ray, but I will say this. There's definitely a big question mark because we don't know what Cam Newton we're getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
New England doesn't know what Cam Newton they're getting. You know, the last game, you know, before he was injured in Carolina, he definitely looked as if he was progressing as a pocket passer. I think he had 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and he almost had a high 60% completion percentage playing for North Turner.
Mm-hmm.
But that Cam Newton of old, and I'm hoping he, you know, can revert to and he progresses as a passer. He, you know, when he needs to, he can revert and use his speed and his ability and his, quite frankly, his brute strength to, you know, to create plays with his legs. But what Cam Newton are we getting? I don't think you're going to get the days of the Cam Newton that could erase those mistakes or hide those mistakes in the personnel that he did in Carolina. He enters a situation in New England where the last quarterback, who some may say is the GOAT, complained at times because of the lack of weapons. And he's coming into a same situation where there aren't going to be a whole lot of weapons as far as from a receiver standpoint, and the tight ends are very untested.
I just think
go ahead.
No, I just think that the Cam you're getting, well, one, I think Cam is motivated, right? Because we just talked about all these teams that passed up on Cam Newton, right? And secondly, in terms of what if you're comparing him to Brady last year to what he is this year, if you look at that Brady from what it was and his talent level and where he was at, he just wasn't that good last year. Forget the talent. He just personally wasn't that good in terms of the Brady we've seen in the past. Now, granted, he didn't have a lot around him, but we've seen Brady in the past work with less and still put up numbers regardless. Cam Newton has done that in Carolina with like less talent, and they drafted, and the Patriots, I believe, drafted a tight end in Keene out of Virginia Tech. So they have a tight end coming in that's young and up and coming. So it fits to me. And then also, if you look at Josh McDaniels in terms of Cam's skill set and as a mobile, you know, RPO type of offense, he did it in Denver Tebow. Right. And Cam is way better than Tim Tebow. So you're going to have a better passive version of Tim Tebow, and a guy who will still be able to be mobile in the pocket, be able to give you extra yards. Now, I'm with you, Will.
I cannot hear you.
Can you hear me?
Nope.
Oh, you still can't hear me? Y'all can't hear me?
I can hear you now.
I'm sorry. My fault.
I can hear you now.
All right. Yep. Having like him being a mobile quarterback in that offense, having Josh McDaniels as a coordinator, knowing that he's worked with Tim Tebow in Denver in an RPO type of style, I think he could still be very effective in this offense. We've seen other quarterbacks lesser than Brady, lesser than Cam, be able to be successful in this offense. We saw Matt Castle win 11 games. We've seen Brissett, spell Brady and be very successful. We've seen Garoppolo in New England before he's gotten better, like win games with the Patriots. So I think Cam can definitely get it done. But the whole thing is that it's, if Cam is healthy, that's my thing, is Cam healthy. If he's healthy, he's good.
I mean, that's the big if.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe New England had the opportunity to even have their doctors conduct a physical on them. It's based off of, it may be based off of paperwork and the x-rays that, an outside doctor forwarded to New England's medical team. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, how Josh McDaniels creates the offense around Cam. Mm-hmm. Because I think one thing is for sure, the type of talent that Cam Newton is, you do have to create an offense around him. And yeah, that's not to say that he can't do the things that Tom Brady did, but he has such a unique skill set, and also physically, and so imposing that as a quarterback, that it'd be interesting to see what they do with him, with Cam Newton.
Ray, I think you wanted to say something too, right?
I was just going to say what you said, so brother, you covered it.
Oh. No, I mean, it's an interesting situation, right? To me, it's all about when you're looking at Cam, and this is the thing that bothers me. I go back to what Will said initially when the show started, the contract he got. I believe if you do an add up, and I saw this post like on Twitter, if you add up Cam Newton's contract and Jameis Winston together, Chase Daniel still gets paid more than both of them combined. And that says a lot, man. That says a lot.
It does. I'm not trying to insinuate anything.
No, I'm not. I know.
From a racial standpoint, but I'm just saying it's interesting that when you think of a 31-year-old quarterback,
MVP,
who is coming off of an injury, but the last time we saw him, his body of work was 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, high 60% completion rate. In an offense where he was really devoid of talent at the wide receiver position, only having Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting, that he couldn't get a starting opportunity. Look at Chicago. Chicago has, let's be honest, a bunch of nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
With Mitchell Trubisky and, Nick Foles won a championship for Philadelphia, but outside of that stretch, that run in Philadelphia, what has he really done lately? You look at that, and then you also look at Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jacksonville, you got, at the time, the Chargers, they just drafted somebody, but you have a lot of teams that could have used a Cam Newton. They decided not to go that route. So my question to y'all is that is Cam Newton, and I think I talked about it on my end, but is Cam Newton, going to the situation, do you look at him better than a 2019 Brady, or you think Brady 2019 would still be better than this Cam?
I'll let you take it first, Ray.
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to say Brady because Brady was successful for many years. I mean, went to so many Super Bowls and won many Super Bowls up until that point.
Yeah.
So his familiarity with the offense, his ability to adapt, his relationship with Josh McDaniels, I believe that you got to stick with Brady. And Cam just has, for different reasons, been inconsistent mm-hmm. over his career. I respect Will pointing out the MVP constantly, but that's selective when it comes to Cam, obviously, because there's other MVP quarterbacks that you constantly bash. So,
okay. I know you was going with that. I did not know where he was going with that.
A former MVP. like, please, man. Like Cam. I mean, I'm a Cam fan. Don't get it twisted, but he's been seriously inconsistent without the injuries or in the discussion, including injuries. It is what it is. So I got to stick with Brady on that one.
didn't know he was going with that one at first.
That's fine, Ray. But you know what I will say about your quarterback MVP is that he's consistently had weapons, something that Cam Newton hasn't had throughout his career.
That's fair.
But anyway, to ask
y'all
you
crazy,
question,
bro.
to answer your question, Wally. If we're just going off based off of skill,
yeah.
We're going based off
if healthy skill, too, if healthy, because they both just
if
say
healthy,
if healthy
based off of skill.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with if healthy. I'm gonna go with Cam Newton because we've seen what Cam Newton is able to do to erase deficiencies in the offense.
Yeah.
Ray made some great points about the that relationship with Josh McDaniel.
Yeah.
We have seen that relationship get kind of testy in the past with Tom Brady, and we also know for a fact that one of the things that Tom Brady was looking for in his next coach was a coach who's collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say that, you know, when Cam Newton, you know, when he steps on the field in New England, he won't have a lot of say over the play calling,
yeah,
or selection of plays that he likes with Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick.
See, I don't think Cam, and I've heard this before, and I think Ray and I talked about this off air about Cam and, you know, how would he fit in with Belichick and this, that, and the other. And he may be arrogant, but and Ray, do you want to say that? I don't want to steal your answer, steal your comment.
Oh, well, I didn't make an original comment. I got it from, you know, TV this morning.
Okay.
That, you know, Brady's arrogant. Peyton Manning was arrogant. A lot of quarterbacks, a lot of professional athletes are arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if Cam is being singled out for his arrogance when I'm going to, you know, just quote Shannon Sharp. When you're a professional athlete at this level, you have to have some level of arrogance to mm-hmm. succeed. I understand Will's point that the flamboyance comes in the way he dresses and stuff, but come on, man. You can go back all the way to guys like Joe Namath,
mm-hmm.
who make statements off the field. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's being overblown because it's Cam Newton, and this is how the media has viewed him for so long. But mm-hmm. winning cures all. When he was, as Will said, an MVP, nobody was questioning him that season.
Yeah, that's
right. But in reference to the arrogance, I was saying that arrogance with that fan base.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, I know what you're saying. My comment was nothing. It wasn't towards what your comment was. To your comment, it was more towards like the overall perception of Cam Newton. Like he's going to like fight Belichick in the New England process, right? Like I don't, because to me, when you look at Tom Brady, he was fighting the process to a certain extent too. Now it was reported differently, but he was fighting the process. Like
they made him.
They exactly. They were. He was
they
fighting.
They made him who he was.
Yeah.
That's what pisses me off about him is. He changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I told you, Wally, earlier, the guy you see now is not the guy that was tapping Drew Bledsoe on the shoulder saying, we won.
Exactly, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. He just became this diva and somebody who seemed to some degree narcissistic, although
yeah.
some will say that's what made him who he was because, again, he wasn't a top pick. But I just feel like he changed and he turned on the people that actually created him into who he was. You know what I'm saying?
And that was
the
thing.
People
for
who create, I mean, I know we're trying to wrap this segment, but I don't think it's necessarily fair to say that Belichick and Josh McDaniels made him. He put a lot of work into getting himself to that point. Now, was it helped? Was it aided with the coaching of Josh McDaniels mm-hmm. and Bill Belichick and Bill O'Brien
and Charlie White?
Yeah, it's a
lot of guys that you can pinpoint that helped his development. I mean, they showed faith in that man. He might not have got drafted if it weren't for the Patriots, bro.
Yeah.
Like, real talk.
Real talk.
He wasn't good in college. Cam ran through the SEC. You can't say the same about him. He was successful, you know, coming into the league. That's why he was the number one pick. But Tom Brady, come on, man, it speaks for itself, bro. I just feel like, again, kind of like MJ, when the success went to his head and it changed the person that he was. It is what it is.
Hey, real quick before we wrap the show up, I'm not going to break. I'm going to talk about it anyway off the bat. The Major League Baseball season will start July 23rd. It will be a 60-game season. The regular season ends September 27th. Is it worth having a season?
I'll start.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, look.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
You're starting, you know, I think that the most exciting thing about this 60-game season is it's only 60 games and not 182 games.
Yeah.
That's one. Two, I don't get a sense that baseball has done as much planning as the NBA has regarding their safety protocol. To me, it just seems like it's very haphazard and very flung together, you know, last second thrown together.
I agree.
Let throw it against the wall and let's see what sticks, right? I don't get a sense. Or maybe these things have been worked out and they haven't been relayed to the general public. Maybe, you know, the media, you, Wally, you have some insight. the average Joe like myself, it just seems as if this, you know, it's very rushed. Let's get these 60 games so we can get revenue. And, you know, so, you know, the owners, you know, so the owners can, you know, I know that they'll be operating at a loss, but they'll get some type of revenue in.
Mm-hmm.
And the players can get revenue and get a year of service. And it just seems very haphazard and flung together. And I have absolutely no confidence that the season, that they will have a complete season.
Right.
The only thing I agree with you on is that it's a shorter season. We know playoff baseball is so much better than regular season baseball, and it's such a long year most of the time that you get lost in it. You know what I mean? There are times where it's just not, it's not as fun to watch. But in terms of planning, you can't really, well, at least from my perspective, I don't want to compare it to NBA. You're playing largely outdoors. You have the ability to stick players in the stands in order to social distance. Guys aren't that close to each other who are you know, covering bases in an outfield. I feel like they have more of an ability to naturally social distance without extensive planning as comparison to other sports like football or basketball.
You think so? I kind of think that – I don't know. I just think that, you know, if you're going – are you talking about they play in an isolated place, or are you talking about will they still be able to travel? Are you still talking about
– No. I'm just talking about in general, like – you know what I mean? If I'm in right field, you're in center field, we're not close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
In the dugout, we don't have to sit close. Again,
you're just talking about the natural means of the team.
In a sense.
Yeah.
And I'm not sweaty leaning over you while you're trying to post me up.
Okay.
I'm not trying to tackle you.
Oh,
I just feel like naturally the game lends itself, kind of like tennis. It lends itself. There's still some risk factors, of course.
Yeah.
The catcher is close, is close to the batter, things like that. But the planning does not have to be as extensive.
One thing you forgot to take into consideration, Ray, is baseball will have, I believe, 40-man rosters.
Yeah.
Right? So if you put that amount of people on a roster, you infinitely multiply the opportunity for someone to get infected and spread that infection amongst
how?
Whereas the NBA, it's 40 people going to be in the clubhouse, Ray.
But they're going to sit in the stands. There's no going to be no fans. That was the plan from the beginning.
I understand that, Ray. But do you not think that during the pregame practice and warm-ups and clubhouse meeting that people are going to always socially distance when there's 40 people opposed to in the NBA when there's only 12 people?
I mean, it's all messed up. I mean, it's all of it. I mean, to be honest with you, to me, it's no difference. In either sport, like in the NBA, you're in close contact. You're sweating on people. You're in close contact. And in baseball, like Will mentioned, you have 40-man rosters. You're not gonna avoid that type of situation in terms of being able to, but the possibility of infecting somebody if you have it or whatever. So to me, it's like all of it. To me, all sports to me have this issue. Like, there's a chance in all sports.
No, I get it. But like I said, when you have teams that are going to be traveling via...
That's my issue, the traveling part.
Or bus, you know, to multiple parks, even though the parks will be confined to, almost regional areas,
mm-hmm.
It just opens itself to opportunity for spread. As does it inside of a bubble in the NBA. But I feel as if the NBA, they've gone through... I believe that the planning has been a lot better to this point. Whereas, no, I do, because MLB, they just recently agreed that there would be a 60-game season, and they just recently started to put together safety protocols.
Just recently, yeah. I just think it's all jacked up. I think all of it's bad. I'm being honest with you. I think all of it's bad. Like, I think the bubble thing is a bunch of BS to a certain extent. What I mean by that is that, like, you don't think players are gonna sneak in chicks inside the bubble. You don't think players are gonna sneak out. They get, like, you know, bored. Like, they get uber bored and get to a point where, like, they're like, man, screw this. I'm going out. I'm gonna sneak out and do whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I just think the bubble, I think it sounds good. You know what I mean? Oh, it's a bubble. Like, they're gonna be confined in this area. If they get to a point where LeBron was like, man, like, I'm done. I'm tired, man. I'm trying to see what's out there. You don't think LeBron can sneak out?
You know what I'm saying? See what's out there in Orlando?
You can find, if you're bored, you find anything, man. You in the same place forever, he's gonna find something. That's all I'm saying. Like this whole bubble thing. Like, oh, they're in a bubble. They're all gonna be in this their own little community environment. No one's gonna be able to get in. Nah, whatever. Folks are sneaking in and out. It sounds good. You know what I mean? They're in a bubble. Sounds like some stupid ass Marvel movie or something. You know, some Avengers type crap. You know what I'm saying? Like, it is.
I just think there's better testing protocols, there's better safety protocols, and there's
more thought,
backup planning, more thought put into the planning for the NBA.
No, I agree. I think there is more thought. No, I'm not gonna lie to you. I think there is more thought in the NBA compared to the other sports. I'm just like, my whole thing about folks acting like, oh my God, it's like, it's so ideal. I'm like, it's not, because there people are gonna do whatever they want to do. They're gonna find a way to cheat the process. And now you're seeing folks getting sick right now anyway. Who knows what's gonna happen? You may get somebody may be infected that gets in, and then you're all screwed up in that situation in the bubble. Now everybody's sick in the bubble. The bubble's sick. It's a sick ass bubble. So I mean, it is what it is. But all right, I'm about to close the show out. Anybody got anything to say? No, it's quiet.
It's great doing the show.
Always, man.
With you guys. Enjoy the fourth. Be safe.
Yeah, man. The fourth.
Yeah. Practice social distancing.
Practice social distancing. You know what I mean? That's what I'm talking about. I don't want to see no fireworks, man. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. This, man, this was a banging show. Appreciate you all for being on. Go ahead, Wilson.
One last question. Yeah. Ron Rivera, is now the time for us to talk about the name change? That's all I got to ask.
Huh? What'd you say?
Ron Rivera, when is the time for us to discuss the name change?
Oh, are you talking to Ron Rivera? Like, what? Okay.
My only question.
You're asking us if he's listening to the show. I got you. Okay, now I dig. Hey, man, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
The agent.
You dig?
Boosted.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie.